Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast. I'm Kevin Clark. I'm an associate editor here at America Magazine. I'm joined today by George Anderson, associate editor, and John Donaghy, who is visiting us today from Honduras. John, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got to Honduras and what you're doing there?
I'm originally from the Philadelphia area, but for the 24 years before I went to Honduras, I was in Iowa working at a Catholic student center and parish there doing campus ministry and social ministry. After Katrina, I took a group from the Catholic student center in Ames to New Orleans, and while we were emptying out houses, something was emptied out in me, and I felt that I was being called for something more. I wrote to my friend in Honduras and asked her, do you think I could be of use there? And she said, well, you're coming to visit. Why don't you go talk to the bishop? And so I did, and he said, come. And that was it. And in June of 2007, I found myself in Honduras beginning to serve.
And you've been working at the same diocese in Honduras for the last 2.5 years?
That's yes.
Santa Rosa de Copan.
Yes.
So you found yourself at an interesting time in Honduras.
I did not expect it.
Yeah. What were conditions in Honduras when you left?
Very much they were unsure. I mean, we're in a situation where things are happening day by day, and one cannot tell. There had still been declared for more than a week basically what I would call a state of siege. Suspension of right of assembly, suspension suspension of habeas corpus. Although the de facto president, Micheletti, had said he was going to consider it the Monday before changing it, there had not been a change, although from what I have read, it was
lifted today.
Today. So,
would be interim president Roberto Micheletti, who became president after Manuel Zelaya was, depends on who you talk to, deposed or coup d'etat out of office or otherwise removed on June 28th by the Honduran military and civil police.
Yeah. I call it a coup. I call it a coup, as Bishop Santos from the Diocese of Santa Rosa said, using basically the Spanish equivalent of what we say: if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, and smells like, quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
Uh-huh.
And
so, if it wears a military uniform, arrives in a military jeep, and the president ends up in a plane out of the country, it's probably a coup.
Yeah, and but it's a coup that I think a coup is not necessarily just the military taking over; it's a taking over by a group that is not the group in power. So. Mm-hmm.
Well, before we get into the background and what happened on June 28th, can you tell us a little bit? There was a disturbing report in today's New York Times about a total breakdown of the human rights situation in Honduras, and that there seems to be a certain degree of impunity being assumed by the military in their treatment of pro-Zelaya demonstrators. Did you witness anything like this in the country, or what were you seeing when you left?
Where I am in the western part of the country, it's been fairly tranquil. Most of the allegations of human rights are in the capital and in San Pedro Sula, both of which are quite distant. I do know that there was one removal of people from a demonstration about a month and a half ago in which there was some excessive use of force, but I think it's become much more serious these days, and people are concerned. And I think one of the concerns is this a return to the 80s? Or is there going to be an increased amount of violations of human rights? And one of the things that especially disturbs, at least especially one priest friend of mine, is that one of the security advisors is a man named Billy Hoya, who is alleged to be part of a group that is a death squad
from the past.
1980s. Yeah. And so there's concern about that and about other things that may return. I mean, that's a fear people have.
Mm-hmm. But Honduras didn't experience the same level of violence that some of the other countries did in the 80s.
There was not a civil war, but there was a significant amount of torture, disappearances, and illegal detentions.
Mm-hmm. When people are looking at the confrontation now between Zelaya and Micheletti, both of whom are from the same political party,
exactly.
Correct?
Yes.
Is there much expectation that this can be resolved peacefully, that either the Arias plan or the more recent proposal from the business leaders of Honduras will be acceptable to either side or both sides?
One has hopes, especially people there have hopes, but one of the concerns that people have is that the situation will not really improve for the poor, because one of the critical issues... Despite the presidency. Because one of the concerns is that there are many parties, but there are two parties that are the ones that have basically had control for probably close to 100 years, the National and the Liberal Party, both of which are traditional liberal parties. They have basically shared power. They also have been very closely connected to the sources of economic and political power throughout the last 100 or so years. And
both men vying for the presidency are close to those sources of power as well.
Yes.
Family connections,
yeah,
et cetera.
Exactly, yeah. So the whole question is the whole question I see is whether there will be real change that will, in other words, break the monopoly of power that has been held by, what might call the political and economic elite in the country for too many years.
Now, there have been people demonstrating essentially every day since the June 28 removal of Zelaya from office and his kind of impromptu deportation out of the country. These folks, did they have much expectation that they can continue to peacefully call on his restoration of power? Or is there a sense that people feel that a more violent civil confrontation is forthcoming?
I have not really heard that. There are people who are talking about it, but I really think that people want to see some sort of a peaceful change. But many of the people are saying it's not enough of restoration of Zelaya. A number of people who are in the opposition are concerned of what he was removed for, calling for a constituent assembly, which would be like a constitutional convention. People are saying we really need a constitutional convention.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people are no longer satisfied with just restoring the president.
A number of people. The numbers are really hard to tell. I mean, both sides say 90% are on their side, but it's obviously that can't be the case, and it's obviously that it's not the case.
To the people in the countryside, are they watching these events as keenly as the people in the capital or in the cities?
It depends. There's a lot of people who are so fed up with politics and the corruption, and have been for years, that they haven't voted because they just don't see any use of it, because they're both corrupt, or especially the major parties, and they just don't feel a sense of being able to do things. But there are a good number of people that I see that really want some sort of a change.
And does Zelaya make a sort of a surprising champion of the downtrodden in Honduras? I mean, is he just sort of all they've got going, and that's why he's getting so much support from?
It's very interesting. Zelaya has a very interesting history. Came in sort of a, I would say, middle of the road, a little bit liberal. But for a number of different reasons, he began to respond to some of the needs of the people, began to see a need for some changes. One of the first things he did was a law of citizenship participation and a law of transparency. And even though he has been accused of corruption, he did help bring these types of laws in that would allow for more political participation. But he also has done a number of different things in terms of trying to meet the needs of people. For example, one of the things he did was, and he was supported in this by Micheletti, was make the arrangement with Petrocaribe, which I think is the Chavez oil group, to bring in, what should we say, cheaper oil, so they could cut down the cost of that for the people. And there are a number of other things that he's done in terms of schools, other areas of social needs that he's done that. He also raised recently the minimum wage significantly, about 60%, maybe precipitously, but he did that. And so for many people, he's seen as a source of hope, even though,
many people also see him as a Chavezian-style threat to democracy in Honduras. Could you talk about that a little bit, or that fear?
I think that fear is, there may be a little bit to it, but I think is, know, they were calling him a communist and a socialist, and he's far from that. He's far from being a communist. You know, there was some influence of Chavez, but that was, I think some of it was pragmatic.
Well, why don't we talk a little bit about what's happened to the Honduran Catholic Church since June 28. On July 3rd, we had a Episcopal letter signed by all of the local bishops, basically giving, guarded support for the removal of Zelaya, denoting it not as a coup but as a legitimate constitutional removal based on, I think, Article 239 of the Honduran Constitution, which I guess prohibits the, what was it, prohibiting the president from seeking a third term, which is...
A second term,
which is what
for,
the...
And for advocating it, but he never did it.
There was some, he might have been trying to do it without saying it out loud.
But that's the whole question is, can you accuse someone of something that they even haven't acknowledged?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the real concern. I have to note that a day before that, on July 2nd, the Diocesan Pastoral Council of Santa Rosa de Copan released a statement read by the bishop that basically said that it was a coup. And basically holding responsible those who voted for the removal of the president and the giving of the presidential power to Micheletti.
But the next day, Bishop Santo signed the letter of July 3rd, which
basically
gave guarded approval to the coup,
and
whatever you want to call it.
There was originally in the letter stating that it was not a coup. He refused to sign. He said, if it stays in the letter that this is not a coup, I will not sign it. And the and most of the bishops supported him on not having that phrase in the letter. But he signed it, but he has also recently, from a report I read in the newspaper of a television interview, has said that he was mistaken and that the documents that they were given, when you examine them more carefully, there's a really serious question in terms of whether they are authentic.
Wow, so Bishop Santos is saying he was given a
basically, there are enough questions about them that he's removed his...
He's got signer's remorse now.
He definitely has.
Can you tell us what the September 28 letter that came out of his diocese, what was sort of the nexus, the nut of that letter?
That was basically saying that this is a coup again. We need the restoration of constitutional order, which would mean the restoration of Zelaya, but also seeing that there are other needs that need to be done in terms of the justice of the situation.
Has this this rift between Santos and Cardinal Rodriguez, who's the Archbishop of Tegucigalpa, is this repeated throughout the church, or is more of the church sort of signing up, lining up with one or the other?
Among the hierarchy, there have not been any statement. The only bishop that has made a statement separate from the bishop's statement, the conference statement, has Santos. There have been statements from some of the religious orders, the Franciscans, the Conference of Men and Women Religious, Lurethra statement, which the cardinal forbade them to publish. The Central American Jesuits released a statement, also in a couple of, and the Dominicans have released statements, very much, you know, raising serious questions or condemning the coup, depending upon which group it was. Within the people, there are rifts too. There are rifts in terms of people who think the Zelaya should have been removed. There are others who are saying that this was illegal. There are rifts even. There are even a few priests in the Diocese of Santa Rosa de Copan who are not in accord with their bishop's statement, but they're not stating it, you know, publicly out of deference to the bishop.
And then there's the Jesuit priest in the capital. Is it Father Moreno?
He's not in the capital. He's in El Progreso in Europe.
El Progreso.
He has been very, very strong against the coup from the beginning. In fact, for reason, because the radio station that he is director of was invaded by the military just right after the coup, and it was closed for a short period of time. And there have been threats against it since then. So.
Mm-hmm. And he's apparently been threatened. His life has been threatened.
Yes, he's received death threats also. Yeah. Yeah.
Are there threats from the OAS, the Organization of American States, and the United States have tried to apply pressure on Micheletti's government by cutting off aid, among other things? Is there any threat to the citizens of Honduras, the very poor citizens of Honduras, from these kinds of strategies?
The World Bank, I think it was the World Bank, froze their funding in June. We at Caritas in Santa Rosa had a program which we were beginning, and the funds were dropped because they were World Bank funds that we were working with Catholic Relief Services to begin a program on maternal and infant health, and we basically had to freeze that.
So the longer this crisis continues, the more it's going to have an impact on the poorest people in the country.
Right. I mean, no matter what happens in terms of the freezing of other things, you know, those who have a lot of money are going
freezing
to be able,
assets
and that. Yeah. They're still going to be able to deal with things. The question for me is, what's going to happen to the poor? And, you know, what will really be done for them? Yeah, you know, that's for me is the prime question. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not merely Micheletti, it's not merely Zelaya, it's the whole question is how in the long range will there be efforts made to really begin to help the poor to be participants in their own development, in their own growth.
And that's likely to be a question that will persist regardless of the outcome of this current stalemate at the Brazilian embassy.
Yeah.
I'd like to thank John Donaghy for Donaghy, I'm going to get that name straight, John Donaghy, for visiting with us today. John, when will you be returning to Honduras?
The end of this month.
Well, good luck to you and be careful down there.
I want to thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the America Magazine podcast. I also want to thank Kevin Clark for conducting that interview. That took place last week, October 6th, so just to place it in time because, of course, the events in Honduras are changing every day. Reminder to look online for other features, including this week, a review of the film The Invention of Lying, starring Ricky Gervais. Also a reminder that you can respond to our podcast by going to americamagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.